Well, I thought that was, you didn't answer me back, so I figured if I put Milfy in there, you'd go running over to see it. Since I know your style.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's October 22nd, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 141.
This is No Agenda.
Reading the Baucus Bill so you don't have to, because, hey, it's what we do. And coming to you from the minimum security containment cell in Gitmo Nation West, San Francisco, California, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Foggy Bottom, Northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
And John, may I say right off the bat, happy International Caps Lock Day.
What?
Happy International Caps Lock Day.
Where did that one come from?
It's apparently on June 28th. It comes twice a year.
Well, yeah, because you got to turn the caps lock
on and off. Of course. It comes on October 22nd and June 28th.
I wonder who dreamed that one up.
Oh, there's a whole forum. It's capslockday.com.
Caps lock. I wrote an entire column about caps lock once for PC Computing. And, you know, the editor says, you can't write one whole column just complaining about caps lock.
Did you write it in uppercase?
No.
This back in the days of radio when we had liner cards, you remember those? Where the program director would basically give you a stack of, there's like a little stack of index cards, recipe index cards, that would actually be in a recipe index card box on the console in the studio. And on the clock, you'd have like, you know, either 7 after the hour or, you know, once or twice during the hour, you'd have to read a liner card. And so you'd pick the front one out of the stack, and after you were done reading it, you'd put it at the back. And they were always in uppercase, all caps. And to this day, my radio hero, Scott Shannon, who was one of the inventors of the Morning Zoo format,
in the morning,
still writes emails to me in all uppercase caps lock.
That's hilarious.
It is, because you can't read it. You know, it's like, stop! You're hurting my eyes.
I know that. In front, one of the things I've always wanted to do is do have some little outlet to write PSAs, because I never worked on a commercial station but I read a lot of PSAs on non-commercial stations, right. And PSAs were always written that way, double spaced, uppercase.
Yeah.
Because apparently the timing would take 1 second to read a line, and you could time it out just by typing it out, and so you could do a 30-second one with just 30 quick lines.
Well, that's still how copy is written. Do you remember those television copy sheets where you'd have the lines and they'd be spaced in a certain way that if you filled up a line that would be exactly 1 second, and that's how they back time segments.
Right.
Yeah.
Depends on how fast you read, but in fact, they're supposed to be timed out to 1 second. But it's always all uppercase, mm-hmm. And in a certain font that was, you know, typewriter. I guess just some big typewriter, you know, Elite or whatever. I can't remember the names of the typewriter fonts anymore. Pica? I don't know what it was. What they call
it? Is it Pica or Pica?
It's Pica.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that.
So we got a lot of news over the last few days.
You know, this is one of those days where I'm like, because first of all, I had a lot of time during the week. I had, you know, I wasn't traveling for once, and I had a pretty slow meeting schedule. And let's face it, I don't really do any fucking work. So I'm just sitting behind my
computer.
You're
just a suit.
Yeah, a suit, not even wearing a suit. And, and dude, I've got like 3 pages of links. There is so much news that came out. This is one of these days when I'm like, please, please, producers, give us enough money so I can quit my day job.
You know, the thing is that I actually had to cut back on a couple of the clips. I think I sent a bunch in.
Yeah, like 8 or 9, I think.
But let's start with I don't have a list in front of me. But there's a... I think we should start the day off because it's going to be kind of heavy later. To start off with a little light clip, and play the fake commercial.
Okie dokie.
Who could forget that one? Hi, I'm the mayor of comedy, here to tell you about a new CD offer, sitcom punchlines of the 80s, including such gems as I Think It's Time for Plan B, Smooth Move, X-Lax, and That Went Well. Also, Check, please. Plus, open mouth, insert foot, and wait. If you're here, then that means, oh boy. Order now and receive Sounds of the 80s Studio Audience, which includes Trouble Brewing, as well as Sweet Moment. And, of course, Ethnic Kiss. This is an offer you don't want to miss. But don't take my word for it. Hear what 80s mainstay Howard Hessman has to say about it.
I love it.
Would Howard Hessman lie for weed? We don't think so. Order now.
Anyway, that's courtesy of the Family Guy.
Howard Hessman was Dr. Johnny Fever, wasn't he, on WKRP?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was up for the, you remember the remake of WKRP?
Yeah.
I auditioned for that, and they basically gave me the gig, but my ex-wife wouldn't move to L.A. with me.
Oh.
And, of course, the show failed.
Yeah. In the morning!
May have done well with you on it.
Yes, my point exactly. Yeah, I want to start, you know, let me give you a link, and people in the chat room at noagendachat.com can follow along. If you go to drop.io/WSJ_insult... And I'll, you know, I'll Skype that to you, John, because I know you can't remember anything.
Huh?
Here it is. Actually, I'll paste it into the chat room as well. So, a little bit of disclosure, although I really didn't think much of it at the time, but you've probably heard about this huge insider trading scandal on Wall Street involving a hedge fund called Galleon. And what's interesting about this this story, well, there's two things that are interesting. One is I've met all these guys. They have an office on Sand Hill Road in Silicon Valley, and they're actually a reasonably respectable venture capital arm, and they do it from their hedge fund, and their hedge fund is huge. So I've met this guy Raj Rajaratnam, who you see in pictures being led away in handcuffs. And what was troubling me about this whole story is the amount, because apparently he enriched himself with $22 million due to insider trading. And I'm like, $22 million, that's like a rounding error on this guy's salary. And he's like the 236th wealthiest person in America. He's a multi-billionaire. Like, this stinks. It really, really stinks. And so, of course, as you start reading into it, you know, you start figuring out, well, you know, geez, this makes so much sense. This is just a huge distraction to hide all the real theft, all the billions of dollars of theft that is being perpetrated by Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase with, you know, the high velocity trading and stealing TARP money, all this shit. It's just to make it look like, of course, we now have the new SEC ex-Goldman Sachs shill who's running the fraud division of the SEC. So it looks like they're really doing something. And it's on the cover of the Wall Street Journal. And as I'm reading through these articles, I don't know if you brought up that link by now, John.
Yeah.
I'm like, who reads the Wall Street Journal? Because they have basically a cartoon. I just lost the link here. It's basically our cartoon of how it works, how insider trading works. Yeah.
It's like one of those comic books that explains philosophy.
Yeah, and it's literally like insider gives information.
Yeah, no, it's pretty stupid.
It's like, and it literally starts off with insider gives information to. From an insider at Moody's gives information to someone at Galleon. Galleon then buys shares. The information comes out. The shares go up. Galleon sells and then pays off the informant. Like, duh! It's like a USA Today comic. And like, so...
Actually, illustration's the better word.
Yes, illustration. And it's like, I can't believe, and I'm like, okay, I'm never reading the Wall Street Journal again. It is just too stupid.
A lot of people believe, well, you know, they've decided to dumb it down very slowly, and that's...
It's now a Murdoch publication, right? He owns it.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. But it's
he owns the London Sunday Times, too, and it's not, you know, that they don't do any dumbing down there. Or do they?
I beg to differ. I mean, it's all dumbed down, and that'll be my my theme for today, or at least the rest of the week, is that very, very slowly, I believe that the masses are starting to see how it's done. You know, we're showing people how there's media distractions. So, you know, the basic, don't look over here.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
So that everyone's busy with Balloon Boy while the Baucus bill is being negotiated backstage, you know, not on C-SPAN as promised, but in secret. We get these huge, and by the way, this is also against the Indian cabal, and there's no doubt about it. This is totally, if you read all the Wall Street Journal articles about this, and the whole first three pages are about this $22 million huge scandal. By the way, we didn't take any investment from them. I just might want to point that out. You know, it's clear that there's just a couple things going on. Wall Street, now that Wall Street has eaten everybody else's lunch, they're eating themselves. And they're
they're gnawing off their own legs.
They are. That's totally what's happening. Like, who can I eat today? And, you know, there's going to be, like, basically one guy left. Goldman Sachs, that's going to be it, and they'll be running the show.
We should just give them the government now.
I think they already have it. You know, if I look at, I know. I mean, look at Timmy Geithner, and he's just, you know, he's like.
So how come every night on the nightly news, Obama is someplace other than Washington, D.C. giving another speech?
I know. He was in, he was just doing another fundraiser.
And he was in San Francisco
He was in San Francisco, but then Tuesday he was somewhere else. I actually wrote it down somewhere. He was doing another fundraiser in, I think, Boston, maybe? The guy doesn't do anything for us.
All he does is go floating around, giving speeches and talks and complaining. Now he's complaining about, you know, I mean, he still complains very well, I have to say. So here's one I want to get. You know, we talked about this in previous shows. I just want to run this one by you because I've been baffled by this particular story. Over the last week, there have been three, quote unquote, domestic terrorist things going on. Meme term.
Domestic terrorist, yeah.
Yeah, or domestic bread, you know, domestic homegrown is another one.
Domestic bread. I like the domestic weed, man. The domestic weed is the best.
But the other meme to look out for is homegrown terrorists.
So it can be Department of Domestic Security?
So homegrown terrorist is what we're starting to see because that makes, you know, it's all Patriot Act stuff. So yes, you can get the Patriot Act.
Totally.
Actually give it more teeth. Give the Patriot Act more teeth.
Well, doesn't this come right along with that memo that came out that it's all law enforcement saying, you know, we really have to be on the lookout for domestic terrorists and they are people who voted for Ron Paul, carry around a copy of the Constitution,
right,
or actually listen to No Agenda.
That went over like a lead balloon, so they've had to change it. So now they're bringing out news stories, and they just keep bringing up this homegrown. Another example of a homegrown. Oh, God, homegrown. So this week, there were three incidents. One of them was some Muslim guy who is a homegrown terrorist, Muslim convert, and he was plotting against somebody or other because they caught him, you know, but they couldn't find they couldn't buy any automatic weapons to carry out their plot.
Yeah, automatic weapons.
Up,
yeah.
Kill people in a mall. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, with automatic weapons, we're going to blow people up. No.
Okay, so that, but they arrested him anyway, and it looks like a guy looks like a mole, if you ask me.
Wait, does he have a beard?
Yeah.
No, he fits the bill. Perfect.
Yeah, he looks like the right type. He's got the beard. It's not a big giant beard like a good Taliban would have, but he's got the beard.
Hey, wait a minute. Let's call Central Casting. They got to send us some better actors, damn it.
Get the real beard out there, buddy.
Get some good dudes in here.
Okay. Right. So anyway, so there's these three incidents this week, and every one of them, you know, there's a guy who's going to shoot up a mall, and there's a guy who runs over his daughter because she's too westernized, and these headlines are always the same. A man does this, a man does that, a man does this, but then there's this third incident. And it keeps citing the guy's name in the headline as though it's some sort of code for like the CIA or somebody. It keeps coming up. John Breck arrested. John Breck arrested. And then they had it on a crawl. I saw the crawl on Fox. It said John Breck arrested. John Breck arrested. Newark security guard making terrorist threats against Obama.
At a coffee cart. The guy was drinking some coffee, and he's like, he probably said, like, damn president. Boom.
But why is his name in the headline? Why isn't man arrested in Newark, you know, or something like that? Why is it John Breck?
That's interesting. You know, in many countries in Europe, and of course, this is always used at the government's discretion. You actually can't use someone's full name in the press until they have been convicted, because you can get sued for libel.
Yeah, but he's just arrested. He wasn't convicted of anything. But in fact, there could be a suit here.
Well, yeah, if you say John Breck arrested for domestic terrorism, you can.
Well, so he says,
it would be John B. is typically what they do.
Yeah, well, this one is. But why would they use it? Normally, it would be written, a man arrested in Newark, a security guard accused of making terrorist threats against Obama. And so why is this John Breck's name? It just seems to me like somebody somewhere is a, wait for the name John Breck to show up, then make your move. I mean, I'm telling you, it just doesn't make any sense at all. Because John Breck is not some guy named that we all know, John Breck.
Now, if it said John Galt arrested, it would get my interest. There we go. Another Atlas Shrugged plug right at the beginning of the show.
To get it in nonetheless.
Well, I just Googled John Breck, and there's a couple of interesting references to John Breck. What's this? 1939 archpriest and theologian of the Orthodox Church in America. Your point is well made. It's like, huh? Like, we're supposed to know John Breck. And I think maybe that's kind of like a psyops move, you know? So it comes across as, oh, well, of course, John Breck, you know, the guy that they were after, the domestic terrorist. John Breck, they got him. Whoo! Whoo! let me call my representative and tell him to extend that Patriot Act right now. Woohoo!
Yeah, they finally got John Breck. So, and what's really actually kind of humorous about in the Huffington, they got Breck spelled one way in the headline and another way with a C in it in the Slug.
In the Huffington Post?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's total a CIA. That's a CIA outfit. You know they are. What is the deal with that Arianna Huffington anyway?
I have no idea.
I remember all of a sudden she appeared on the scene and was like, oh, Arianna. And I'm just like, isn't she the wife of some rich dude?
Yeah.
You know,
some very fey character who ran for governor.
Yeah, and she would have been really milfy 20 years ago, and now she's just like, you know, now she's like Ava Gabor, only old.
Totally Ava Gabor with the same exact accent.
Yeah. And that would have been hot if she were a little bit younger, but she's like, it doesn't work for me.
Anyway, so I'm just concerned about this John Breck thing. There's something fishy about it.
Well, I do agree that they're really pushing the domestic terrorism. And you're right, the meme is domestic this, domestic that.
And homegrown.
And why, if all the terror is homegrown, can we leave Afghanistan, please? Because we know there's only 100 Al-Qaeda there. So let those 100 guys participate in a circle jerk. Come on back. Stand at the airport. Stand at the ports. You know, stand along the border and don't let them in. If you're really that concerned, which of course you aren't.
So since I've got hold of the box of the sounds, I want to play a clip, another meme that's starting up on, you know how every week, and people out there should know that one of the themes that we do on the show is that we try to see what the right wing is creating as a distraction to talk about. And right now it's essentially nothing but the medical bill.
Healthcare insurance reform, as our president has reminded us.
So the healthcare thing is all they're concerned about. The left wingers have been kind of flopping around. I mean, the balloon boy thing died off a little too prematurely. So I think I figured out what the next big thing is that everybody wants to talk about.
Okay.
Play heroin.
That's new? All right.
Groups hope to undermine troop effectiveness while raising cash for weapons and recruiting. They already generate much of the cash at the Taliban through the sale of heroin to the world. It could be a very effective strategy for the Taliban. In fact, here at the morning meeting, sources tell us serious drug use by U.S. soldiers has actually doubled in the last 4 years. And anecdotally, you talk to soldiers in Afghanistan, they spend most of their time sitting around waiting for a mission, which only opens up that much more of an opportunity to take some heroin. And here to discuss the growing
Hey, John, you know what I'm doing at the office all day when I'm just sitting around? I'm just thinking, maybe I should just do some heroin, man.
It's like, because that's the first thing that comes to mind.
I got nothing better to do. By the way, if this doesn't prove the entire fractal of Vietnam, that's exactly what happened, you know, or at least that's what we were told, is, troops are just sitting around there waiting for the VC, and then we just did some heroin.
So they bring an expert on during this little segment.
But who
comes up with the biggest crock of crap that I've ever heard. He's like, I don't think he knows anything, so he's just kind of making it up as he goes along.
So what they're saying is, because there is an intense amount of production of poppy and thus opium in Afghanistan, that soldiers just like walk into the village and say, "Hey, yo, give me some heroin." Like they go to their local dealer. You know, this is not how it works. You know, most of that stuff isn't really refined and sellable on the street or usable until it hits the Wall Street companies who the government is shipping it to. So it's just it's a ridiculous connection.
Yeah, well, it gets worse. Listen.
Osner, also author of Miami Babylon, joins us from Miami. Also in the conversation, former CIA Special Agent Jack Rice, who is going to Afghanistan in just a couple of weeks to make a variety of assessments, not the least of which the heroin problem. Gerald, you broke the story. What is the scale of the problem?
Well, this is the CIA guy, or is this...
No, this is the book author.
The book, okay, of Miami Babylon. Is that a new show on Bravo? Miami Babylon.
Well, you know, right now, Dylan, we're looking at just what we hope is going to be the beginning.
The tip of the iceberg.
Beginning of this, but they're preparing.
No, you say what we hope is the beginning of it. What do they want to make, it worse?
We hope. I hope there's more so I can have more appearances on your show.
Well, you know, right now, Dylan, we're looking at just what we hope is going to be the beginning of this, but they're preparing, and when I say they, the Army and the Veterans Administration is preparing in their hospitals for what might be a deluge, because, look, in Vietnam, we ended up with nearly a 20% addiction rate to China White, the heroin that was coming.
China White, baby. Snoo. China White. What is he using, slang?
From the adjacent Golden Triangle. The Soviets in the 1980s went back to Russia with a major heroin problem, and today Russia is the number one consuming heroin country on the planet as a result of those returning Soviet fighters. Today's Taliban are yesterday's Mujahideen who fought the Soviets. They understand that this is an additional weapon. They are getting their money as you...
Didn't we set up the Mujahideen? Didn't the CIA set that up?
Yeah.
So that's his next guest.
You said from the heroin and opium crop, 90% of the opium, and they're looking at the possibility of hooking Americans not only on the cheap heroin, but according to the U.S. intelligence report and picking up of conversations, they developed the ability now for smokable heroin. Their labs didn't have that before.
This okay, makes stop them right there. What he's talking about from 1980 just until recently, they never had smokable heroin. Doesn't the term chasing the dragon specifically refer to smoking heroin? And that term became popular in the 70s.
Well, there's something different.
This is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you can smoke heroin. It's not like you get a different kind for smoking.
Yeah.
It's smokable heroin. It's just like.
The fact of the matter is, they're probably smoking opium anyway. Since that's just the stuff that would be around.
Yeah, because there is no heroin out there. It's not like... Oh.
And so, you know, what do you smoke? What's that black goop you're smoking there? Oh, it must be some new development.
Ah, new drug. Oh, my gosh. This is a new form of warfare. We're going to get our troops high.
Up of conversations. They developed the ability now for smokable heroin. They're
developed the availability...
The ability. Well, his wordage uses for a writer is pretty crappy, so I don't know what it is. Play that again, see what he actually says.
They developed the ability now for smokable heroin. Their labs didn't have that before.
Oh, their labs didn't have that before. Now I get it. Okay.
This makes it a much easier way to try to get it around. This is concern to Army officers I talked to.
Did you hear what he said? This is concern to our media. He stumbled. Let me hear that again.
I didn't have that before. This makes it a much easier way to try to get it around. This is concern to Army officers I talked to.
To our media. Our media should be all over this shit, damn it. You know what? First of all, this guy, screw you. Because, you know, I have high respect and regard for the men and women in service. I come from a long line of government issue. And, you know, there's some real patriots, even though they've been thrown into some bullshit place for a bullshit war of bullshit necessity. You know, this is a very, very, very anti-patriotic, horrible assertion to make. It's wrong.
Yeah, and by the way, any vet out there who's actually done duty in Afghanistan that listens to the show, I suppose there's a guy or two. Send us a briefing. We won't use your name if you don't want us to. Explaining what's actually going on over there regarding these accusations.
And I'll just tell you that the largest users of cocaine and heroin, and this is fact, provable. And documented many, many times over, outside of crack, I'll just put that off to the side, it's going to be your doctor, it's going to be your lawyer, it's going to be, guys on Wall Street. These are the people who are really using the stuff and who can actually afford it. You know, this is not like, you know, grunts sitting there in the sandstorm.
Bored.
Bored.
What are you doing here, Jim? You want to play some cards?
I got
nothing
to do.
No, let's do some heroin.
Hey, there's this new smokable stuff. Have you tried it yet? It's really cool. Yeah,
this is something they're trying to get. This is a meme they're trying to. They're pulling on the starter of the engine, you know, of the rope that starts the little engine.
So I just like to recall the history. The Taliban had actually obliterated all poppy growth in Afghanistan. They got rid of it. And if you look at the camps, that are set up, they are actually surrounding the poppy fields because the U.S. Army and whatever bits of coalition is out there as well are actually guarding this because it is all about, it's about the pipeline going through Afghanistan and it's about drugs. Drugs that need to be, all studies say that 90% of opium is grown in Afghanistan, and it's a lot of it is used for medical purposes, morphine, etc. It's a real business, and it's being shipped back on military cargo planes to the United States, where it's sold, and that money is flushed into Wall Street. And this is known, you know, Google MENA, Arkansas. Clinton was a big part of that back in the day. And this is what this is all about. And now they're pushing it off on, first of all, how hard is it? You know, oh, we can't stop the transport. Oh, please. I mean, camels going through the desert taking this stuff back to the U.S.? No, it's going on planes. It's not that hard to stop it. It's crap. John?
You know what's, you know what's also interesting, and I got you, I'm going to play one more clip, if you ever see these, they show these pictures of these poppy fields, and they usually show them after the poppies are mature and dried up.
Yeah, when they've opened up, after they become flower.
Well, they flower, and then the flower dies, and then you. I've actually read everything there is to know about cultivating poppies for the purposes of this show.
And yes, of course you did.
It was interesting, to be honest about it. But anyway, they show these. They constantly show soldiers wandering through these fields. These fields are with a soldier standing there. It's like, what is he doing there? Why don't they throw a match on the ground? And this stuff is already dried up.
Yeah, because they're there to protect it, and that's just the photo op field, by the way.
Yeah, who knows what else is going on. So I want to play a clip from Kit Bond, which is crazy senator. This is a Republican from Missouri, a rape Republican, I might add.
Uh-huh.
A pro-rape Republican going on and on about how we need more soldiers and blah, blah, blah. Play the clip and let the thing run to the end. It's got a punchline.
I presume it's idiot senator?
Yeah, idiot senator, that's what I do.
Defense Secretary Gates waved a red flag recently, noting that the United States cannot wait for questions surrounding the legitimacy of the Afghan government to be resolved before a decision on General McChrystal's troop request is made. He understands what I believe is a simple truth. The longer we wait, the stronger and more determined the enemy gets. Just read the papers. Violence is up this season over last. Violence is up this year over the last. The Taliban continues to gain influence in parts of Afghanistan. We keep fighting with what we have, but the insurgents keep getting stronger. We cannot and must not wait any longer for a decision.
Good morning, Vietnam!
In the morning!
All right, good one. You got me.
Okay, now here's the deal.
You did some homework.
I was listening to this idiot going on and on about it, and I was thinking about what is the... As we're approaching winter... In Afghanistan,
the
number of casualties starts to go down because people just actually stop fighting because it's a miserable place and cold.
You just want to sit in your tent and do some smokable heroin.
What is the rush of getting people over? So I did a little research as I did on my opium thing. Well, it turns out that within the next 2 to 4 weeks is when the final poppy harvest comes into play.
And
we need the 40,000 guys, like you said a minute ago.
To go harvest it and ship it
off. No, they wouldn't be harvesting it. They're just going to guard it because obviously, they can't get involved in harvesting, even though when you start reading the documentation, there seems to be some fishy stuff going on, especially with the Canadian troops, by the way. So I did some research, and in fact, poppies take 120 days to get to maturity, and then typically you let them get – there's like a point that lasts only about 7 days where the amount of opium juice is the right consistency. It's not too runny.
It's called opium juice, is it?
It's the little juice. It is a juice that comes out of that bulb. And you have to be careful you don't go dig. I got a link for the show notes that there's a guy that's just a poppy nutball who goes on with every detail. If you want to grow some poppies in your backyard, even though it's illegal.
And they grow everywhere, right? They're real easy to grow.
Yeah, they're very easy to grow, and it's a gorgeous. I saw
it's a beautiful flower. It looks really nice.
The red ones, in particular, are quite gorgeous.
Sure,
I saw some red ones up in the Pacific Northwest. Somebody had them in their field, and you can identify them real easy because they got this big bulb and they're really pretty. But anyway, so there's just a very short period of time. They've got to get these 40,000 troops over there. For the poppies, because the harvest is due, and they need to, they got like about 3 or 4 weeks. And every report you see for the, and by the way, if you look into the government documents, it says that the planting season is May to June, which matches the 120 days plus 10 days for the poppy harvest. Coming up, at the end
like
of
this
October.
Week, like coming up now.
By the end of October, it looks like November 1st, probably, and then throughout November, because they stagger it a little bit because they don't want everything mature at the same time. So they plant from May to June for 2 months, and then they harvest for 2 months.
Right.
And they need these people over there, obviously, because what else is the rush for? Why is Kit Bond? What's he got to do with it? Why is he? By the way, that's only a small clip of this guy ranting about why. McChrystal wanted more. He wants more troops. Let's give him more troops. We got to do it now. And he's like in a big rush. I mean, who's telling him to talk like this?
I love that assertion, John. I think it's more than just an assertion. I think it is a valid theory, and I'm glad that you're on my side of the fence on this one because it makes so much sense. There'll be so much activity, so much moving back and forth. You get those guys in, lots of things flying, completely untrackable, and that's how they guard it, they harvest it, they bring it back. And what else are you going to do in the wintertime?
Yeah.
I love it.
So they may have. I think they probably do two seasons. It sounds like you can't get too much documentation on this. The last good article was written in. I noticed that if you start reading about the poppy harvest, you'll see the dateline on most of these articles is late November. There was one last year in the LA Times, November 28th, talking about the harvest.
And a lot of these links that you research will be in. You sent them to me, and so I have them in the. They'll be in the show notes at noagendashow.com.
Right. Anyway, but it's just, and there's also the link to the guy who's the poppy nut, who's just, I mean, you read this guy and he just tells you all these details. Wow, that's interesting.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
But anyway, this Kit Bond is a bad actor.
He's
a pro-rape Republican from Missouri, and you Missourians should get him out.
Yeah, all of those pro-rape Republicans should be out. All of them.
Well, by the way, there's a new website called, it's called, you can look at it, republicansforrape.org. Republicansforrape.org. And by the way, nobody on MSNBC or even Fox that I could tell have mentioned this. The Department of Defense and the White House are against the Franken bill.
Really?
They're also pro.
Well, of course, the Department of Defense is against it because it's all about the contractors they're hiring. So, I love the little banners. You get banners for your website from RepublicansForRape.org. Cool. Let me just save that to the show notes. That's fantastic. Oh, yeah, of course. Well, there's something else I noticed about the Department of Defense, and it was kind of underreported, but you may have seen that they arrested a spy, John. A scientist was arrested on spy charges, and because apparently he tried to sneak out two thumb drives, which the TSA noticed at the airport as he was flying to abroad. I think he was flying to maybe to Israel. And so when they came back, they nabbed the guy. And they said, oh, what was on these thumb drives? It was, it was very important classified information, about nuclear warfare. And so I'm following up on this guy. Actually, this was another Wall Street Journal picture. I can just find it here. Well, it'll be in the show notes somewhere. And so this is one of the guys who was on the dais talking to the press when what I thought was NASA was going to go bomb the moon. And the only thing that's interesting about the picture is he's holding up a big cardboard picture. Here it is. Space scientist has held his spy. This is it. Actually, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to. I want you to look at this link, John, and you tell me what you see. What is strange? So you don't have to read the story, but just look at the picture. His name is Stuart Nozette, and this is a briefing about the original L-Cross project, which of course was the moon bombing, which we now know was actually intended to bomb someone else's moon base. Had nothing to do with finding water, but now look at this picture, John. Do you have it?
Wait! You just basically gave a leap of faith commentary there that has not been discussed on the show.
Yes, it has.
What, bombing somebody's base?
Yeah, it wasn't about water. It was about bombing someone else's moon base.
We've never talked about this.
Oh well, I'm sorry. Oh, it's about bombing the other moon bases there.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Well, and now look at the picture, and what do you see? You see, so the guy is holding up the big picture. He's in the middle. Okay? Now, where are they standing? Is that NASA?
No, it's the Pentagon.
It's the Pentagon, exactly. So this was a NASA scientist who attempted to pass on top-secret nuclear and space secrets to a shill, an FBI agent. He thought he was passing it on to the Mossad, and you read some of the transcripts of the phone calls they taped. And he actually says, oh, I was wondering when you guys were going to call me, because, of course, it was Israeli moon bases that we bombed. No, seriously, this goes way, way deep,
from
John.
That great Israeli moon project. Okay, so let's. There's something fishy about the story with this guy.
Well, the point is the guy is saying that the end is near for Israel, okay, because Israel is actually coming down. That's what the theory is in all of this.
Okay.
And the reason why, because there's more behind it, is the Catholic Church.
Well, before you drive the show off the track completely, I want to interrupt for 1 second and announce that we do have an executive producer this week.
Yes, please.
Forgot to bring him in. Matt Charpentier, Charpentier. He is Fargo, North Dakota based.
Right on.
And he gave us $188.90.
Thank you very much.
1889 is 1889, which is the year that North Dakota became a state, and Matt is this week's executive producer, and he can
put that on his resume.
Put it on his resume.
And we'll vouch for you. All you have to do is just send us whatever you want. We'll sign it. No problem. Okay, so the reason why this all fits in with the Catholic Church.
Is this from the Dan Brown book?
No. Pope Benedict the, what is he now, the 16th or whatever? Well, of course, we know was a Hitler Jugend. There's no secret about that. Everybody knows that. So basically a Nazi. He change the way the Vatican and the way the Catholic Church works by basically creating a church within a church. He gave an order that allows people who broke away into the Church of England, and I don't know a lot about this background, but this is stuff from Henry VIII and Queen Elizabeth I. In 1534, Henry VIII broke away from Rome and created the Act of Supremacy, which means the only supreme head on earth of the Church of England could be the leader of the Church of England, and basically saying the Pope, we don't have to listen to the Pope anymore. So you've got the Church of England Catholics and you've got the Roman Catholics, and that created this huge divide. And the Pope, all of a sudden, when none of the cardinals knew about it, everyone's caught completely off guard, he changes this whole thing and allows people who had broken off 450 years ago to come back into the Roman Catholic Church led by the Pope. And if you now look at who is now under the Pope's reign, it includes, you know, like 30% of Congress, 40% of the Senate, Tony Blair, who converted to Catholicism. So it's really a huge power play. And if there's one thing the Catholics hate, John, it's the Jews.
No.
Yes.
God.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Jeez.
You're saying that's not true?
No, it's not true.
Yes, it's true. They say that the Jews killed Jesus and all that crap.
Yeah, if you're 12, they say that.
Well, dude, if you, please.
What happened recently is that the
recently, like this week.
Yeah, this week, there's been a problem with the Anglicans, the Episcopalian Church in the United States in particular, but all other parts of the world, ever since they put a gay guy in as a bishop. And a whole group of the very conservative wing of the Episcopalian Party just can't deal with this because it's against the Bible or whatever. And so they split off. They refuse to take part, and this has been going on for a few years now. It's been a big to-do about this, and so part of the but they still needed some sort of a leader because they can't go through the
right. They need a leader who was a Hitler Jugend Nazi.
Well, let me finish. And so then they ended up picking the only other church that they could. There's another kind of an offshoot of the Episcopalian Church, which is in Nigeria or something. So they have to kind of become part of that group. And so I don't think they were comfortable with that. And the Pope just thought this might be a very interesting way to score this group of complainers who would quit the Episcopalian Church. As a matter of fact, I actually know someone who is an Episcopalian minister, female, who quit the Episcopalian Church in protest and became a Catholic. And so he figures, well, come on over, we'll just change a few rules and you can go back to the Catholic side of things until things, you can always quit. And then, I thought it was just a grab for,
power. It's a grab for power. Just look at all the things. Look at what's happening on the sidelines. So you've got 30% of the Congress is Catholics, 40% of the Senate, 6 of the 9 Supreme Court justices are Catholics. Joe Biden is a Catholic, and Tony Blair converted to Catholicism all of a sudden, at the feet of the Pope. And this guy was a Nazi. Yeah, he was a young Nazi, but he was a Nazi. So I'm just saying, and so.
Behind bombing the Israeli bases on the moon.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
And this guy, this
Nozell. And what documentation do you have for Israeli bases on the moon besides,
I've got tons of pictures, but you'll say they're doctored, they're photoshopped.
They are. Without seeing them, I can tell you that.
Okay. Okay.
Why would the Israelis have a moon base? What would be the
point
of that?
They're not the only ones. Everyone's got a moon base up there. There's tons of moon bases.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, please tell me what that water crap was all about then. Where's the follow-up? It wasn't. It was a kinetic weapon, whatever that means. And this guy was a part of it. And then we have another interesting story from... hold on, let me just bring that one up. Because, you know, lots of people know about this stuff. I mean, this is what I was saying at the beginning of the show, John, is that now all the veil is starting to come, is starting to drop away, and people are seeing what's really going on. And yeah, you can keep calling conspiracy theory and kooks and all of that.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'll wait for you.
No, I just do it as we go.
Let me find the guy who was thrown down 120 feet, like the nuclear guy. Hold on a second. Ah, shit. I got too many links.
With this one, with the Israeli moon base, I think we're good for. I think we're safe for 5 years now.
No.
There's not going to be any two shots today.
There was a, no. Hold on a second. I got to find this freaking link. This pisses me off.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Let me guess what the website looks like. Everything is in the biggest font they can find, and it's all centered for, and it goes on forever.
Here it is. British nuclear expert at the United Nations offices in Vienna fell to his death from the 17th floor. He worked for the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization. And he fell 120 feet to his death. Second time this has happened, by the way, this year, that someone at the UN working in one of the nuclear divisions fell to his death. This is a dangerous building, this United Nations.
Apparently, you know.
I wonder if he had took some aspirin before he fell to his death.
It was one of those deals where the elevator door opens and somebody pushes you in?
I think
there's no elevator there?
I think it's the way the state... Well... It's actually interesting. So this is a Telegraph report from the UK. A spokesman in the Austrian capital said there were no suspicious circumstances surrounding the man's death, while a police spokesman said no other person was believed to have been involved. No suicide note was found. But then one of our producers scanned an article for me from, of course, The Sun. But let me read that to you. And I, you know, just like the Men in Black, I think that all the truth is really in the tabloids. British nuclear expert sparked a murder mystery last night after plunging to his death a day before taking part in crucial talks with Iran. Tim Hampton, 44, fell 120 feet down a stairwell at the United Nations headquarters hosting the tense negotiations. Sources said, he was an extremely talented nuclear expert. Mr. Hampton's body was found at 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday. Oh, it's so inconvenient to slip and fall in the morning. Oops.
In the morning!
Pathologists are preparing to carry out a post-mortem, Vienna police said. Murder is one possibility, suicide is another. So, you know, it's like, who's reporting the truth here? So on one hand, we get that, oh, no suicide, it was an accident. And then Vienna police are saying, murder is one possibility, suicide is another. And it's all surrounding nuclear stuff and nuclear
treaties. So why
is,
would they, what, do you have any concept of what was special about this guy, why they'd want to kill him?
Well, this is easy, because there's no nuclear weapons in Iran. This is like the guy they offed in the woods and had him.
Yeah, but don't we know there's no nuclear weapons in Iran?
No, man, we've got to go back in, and we're going to do all these WMD searches and.
Yeah, but don't we know there's no weapons? We just know that they're trying to make one.
No, we don't even know they're trying to make one. Jesus, John, you're already that far. They're trying to make one, everybody.
No, I mean, that's what the litany is. I'm talking about what the litany is. The litany is they're trying
to make
one.
That's good enough. Okay, they're trying to make one. This guy's going to say, they're not trying to make one. They're just trying to make some power. They're trying to keep the lights on. He's just the guy's a troublemaker. Throw him down the stairs.
Well, that's a possibility.
Totally.
Which brings me to another clip.
Ah, lovely.
Since you're talking about the nukes. Now, this is a very difficult clip to listen to because the guy is Pakistani and hard to understand.
Damn them.
And he uses, look for the terms feet on the ground, he uses that to refer to the public. And this was at the United States Institute for Peace.
Oh, I looked that up. The chairman of the United States Institute for Peace, which is also about this whole non-proliferation of nuclear arms, and Clinton just spoke to Hillary Clinton just spoke there the other day.
This was during that. This was done. This was in the question. This was a question he was going to ask Hillary.
And I watched this on C-SPAN, and I went to the website. And here it is. Let me just find the guy's name. Wilson, I think, is... No, hold on.
Well, this is part of that internationalist group that wants a one-world government.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, well, I here it is. I just wanted to give you the chairman's background because it blew me away when I saw that. Executive Office, Board of Directors, here it is. USIP.org, board members. J. Robinson West is the chairman of the Board of Directors, and if you look at his bio, he's the chairman and founder of PFC Energy. He has advised chief executives of leading international oil and gas companies and national oil companies on corporate strategy, portfolio management, acquisitions, divestitures, and investor relations. Yes, he's the guy you want leading the United States Institute of Peace. Do I play the clip?
The clip is this guy, it's interesting. This guy, this Pakistani guy tells a story about what they think in Pakistan about what's going on in Afghanistan and elsewhere in terms of, you know, what the, and the, by the way, in the Pakistanis have a very intense intelligentsia that do things thoughtfully. And Hillary tries to answer this question. I only have a little bit of Hillary at the end. I wasn't going to put the whole thing on there because she has turned into the world's worst bureaucrat when it comes to doing press conferences. She says nothing. Right. And in this case, she was hemming and hawing in such a way that is almost as though everything this – she seemed to be lying to me. And it's almost as though everything you're going to hear from this guy is the truth about at least one arm of the Afghanistani war.
Here we go.
War, yeah. We'll take them on this side.
Okay.
Imtiaz Ali, I'm a Janice Randolph Fellow here at the Institute. My question is somehow related to what Alex raised about Pakistan, because I'm from Pakistan. I'm happy and I appreciate the administration is talking about the long-term relationship with Pakistan. But back home, the overwhelming majority of the people believe that the U.S. presence in the region is all about the Pakistan nukes. The administration has made efforts, yet these efforts of countering those the propaganda and the widespread impression on the ground is that the black waters are there, the Marines are in the embassy, and they are all just to take the Pakistani nukes. I understand that the U.S. ambassador in Pakistan and special envoy. From time to time, they interact with the Pakistani media. But by the time they interact with the media, the conventional wisdom had solidified. So, and related to this is the Kerry-Lugar bill issue. It seems to me that there is lack of coordination between the State Department and Congress when it comes to the Kerry-Lugar bill.
What's the Kerry-Lugar bill?
Kerry, John Kerry, Lou, and Lugar. This began this,
the Kerry-Hakalugi bill.
Kerry-Lugar bill, people can look this up on the, you know, it's all over the place. You look up Kerry-Lugar fiasco and you'll get it. But anyway, what it is that originally there was a bill that was called the Biden-Lugar bill. And the Biden-Lugar bill was going to change our, relationship to Pakistan in a way that the Pakistanis, you know, thought was positive, apparently. And then Kerry, and then Biden was booted out of this deal, and Kerry came in, and Kerry, another internationalist with the, who knows what he's scheming about, and put together what the Pakistanis think is this incredibly onerous bill. In other words, we give the Pakistanis a bunch of money, but then they have to basically kowtow to a whole series of demands. We get to oversee their military. It's almost like a U.S. takeover or an attempted takeover of the whole country of Pakistan, so we're going to be running the show.
Yeah, well,
if they don't meet this requirement and that requirement. It's very much of an
economic hitman.
Hitman.
Yeah, it's like the IMF is doing with countries. It's the way the Confession of Economic Hitman worked. If you read the book, we've talked about it enough. You go in, say, here's a couple $1 billion. Oh, by the way, you leading the shit here. Here's $100 million in a black bag. You take that for yourself, and you can spend that $100 billion on us, and we have all the rights, and we tell you what to do, bitch.
And so you can finish this guy's little thing spiel.
You may call it the success historic step towards enhancing relationship with Pakistan. But the bitter reality is that back home it is considered a big fiasco.
Okay, right now they're going. There's whispering going on. Get that guy out of here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Push him off the stairs.
Hey, oh, yeah.
Would you like some aspirin for that headache?
They're trying to get
this guy's dead.
They actually interrupt him, and she starts answering. You can play a little bit
this
of that.
This guy's toast.
I just want your comments on two questions. How to increase the...
Who let that dickhead in?
...the speed of your counter-propaganda in Pakistan. And second is to coordinate across the whole government to ensure continuity and cohesion of approach.
Okay.
Okay. Well, first of all, you're a dead man.
Well, I'm actually very glad that you raised your questions and made your comment, because I think we have as a government not done a very good job in responding to what you rightly call propaganda, misinformation, even in some instances disinformation about our motivations and our actions in Pakistan.
Oh, wow. Oh, awesome. So is she saying the news media is providing disinformation, or the government is providing disinformation?
She doesn't really say, but I think she's just referring to the fact that the situation in Pakistan in terms of what the public is believing is out of control.
Yeah. That became clear to me as we were doing our review, and I saw how often there were stories in the Pakistani media that were totally untrue, but we were not responding as effectively as we need to. We have under Judith McHale, our Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy, undertaken a very thorough analysis of what better we could do, and we are moving very rapidly to try to fill that void. We have a new
gobbledygook.
She's full of shit.
She's just with that. You listen to her for an hour, she says nothing.
Why don't we
fill the void? Yeah. What void?
Yeah. Well, you know, while we're talking about bullshit, and I found one on I was watching something on C-SPAN that relates to
jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
Yeah! For those producers who have been listening to the show for a while, you know that we very early on caught this whole saved or created meme. For those of you who have forgotten about the $787 billion, it was supposed to save or create 3 to 4 million jobs. And of course, we don't actually know what that means. Saving a job is real easy to bake up some numbers. Actually creating a job is a whole different. I see reports on recovery.gov, you know, 1,000 jobs here, 400 jobs there. Ooh, a small business in some backwoods place has created 30 jobs. But at the opening of Monday's White House press conference, which is led by that what we call the potential cokehead Gibbs, he starts off by allowing this guy Jared Bernstein to talk about how the recovery bill. It's kind of a long clip, but I just want you to listen to him stumble and fumble and bumble, trying to explain how. I think it's $230 billion has saved or created some jobs. And actually, I got the first bit where Gibbs
Good morning, I should say. Sorry, I'm used to doing this in the afternoon. Before we get started with our regularly scheduled programming.
Did you catch that? What he
before
said?
Before we get started with our regular scheduled programming?
Yeah, this is like, so it's like a show. The guy thinks he's doing a TV show. He's like,
Wait, let me play that again.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
I knew you'd love it. I knew you. First of all, he's like, good morning, good afternoon, how you doing, everybody? Before we get started with our regular
you gotta make sure you can't be breathing through your nose.
No, you can't, everybody, because I've been doing a couple lines in the back there. Before we get started with our regularly scheduled program, I've got a little bit of a message for you.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I should say. Sorry, I'm used to doing this in the afternoon. Before we get started with our regularly scheduled programming, Jared Bernstein.
It's like, could it be any more clear that this is a show? It's a show. The show is about to start. But first, we have some psyops for you.
I'm surprised you don't bring out some guy that, you know, come on. Come on, audience. Let's bring it up. Bring it up. Bring it up.
Who knows?
Round of applause.
You know what? We don't know. They don't. We don't see that part. Maybe there is a guy banging his script against his hand. They're like, okay, let's test the applause sign.
We are here to discuss the report that was released this morning on the jobs saved under the recovery plan.
So I looked for the report on the jobs saved under the recovery plan, and I couldn't find it. It's certainly not on the homepage of that $18 million website, recovery.gov. You know, they got lots of, they even have a little box there. Data, 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 data. We're supplying you with lots of data. But you can't actually figure anything out, and there's no report on the jobs saved. Notice Gibbs doesn't say saved or created, but then Jared Bernstein comes on and talks about saved and created.
By teachers, so I'm going to turn it over to...
Teachers. The educational system's getting shafted. There's nothing being saved or created. Here he is, Jared Bernstein. How'd you say that? Hello.
Preliminary reviews of a risk...
Right, okay, right off the bat. Preliminary reviews.
Recipient reporting data from state governments on educational spending through the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, the Recovery Act, show that at least 250,000 educational jobs have been saved or created thus far.
John, help me. Tell me this is crap.
It's unbelievable.
It goes on.
And wait, by the way, and I'm going to reiterate this, and I've noticed it by everybody who comes and speaks for Obama. In fact, I've got a couple of clips we're not going to play this week, but it's the same thing. They keep pounding on the same energy, health, and education. And education seems to be getting screwed in this triad of what we're going to do, and they should have focused on it from the beginning instead of these scams.
Well, they heard you, and so we've interrupted our regularly scheduled programming to bring you an update about how 250,000 jobs were saved or created. Hey, Bernstein, which one was it, dude? Saved or created?
Noted. These are preliminary data.
And by the way, this is bullshit information because it's preliminary. Why don't you just give me the freaking data?
When you use the word preliminary data and somebody finally does the research and gets the real numbers, then you can throw that in their face.
Yeah, of course.
It's just preliminary. We didn't have the right.
By the way, this is the guy talking to the White House press corps. This is what will be filtered into your 6 o'clock news, your morning newspaper. This is propaganda right here. The Ministry of Truth brings you this special bulletin.
Views through the recipient reporting process, as many of you probably know from some reports at the end of last week, we're engaged in what is clearly the most transparent and accountable treatment of a government program that really has ever, I think, been seen heretofore.
So
what?
I love this. So as most of you know, in other words, you should know this. If you don't know this, you are a bad journalist. You have not done your homework. This is the most transparent process ever. Go ahead, John.
The guy's an idiot. Keep playing.
These are recipient data coming in from the states, from Democrats and Republicans. It's a truly a bipartisan report on the progress of the...
What a bipartisan report? You're just supposed to hand us the data, douchebag.
Recovery Act is making so far. Before I turn the podium
what
over to...
What is statistics bipartisan?
Yeah, it's meaningless. This is propaganda. This guy is Jared Bernstein Goebbels.
Melody to talk about the substance of the report. Let me
it's
just say a word or two about how this recipient reporting fits into the larger context of jobs reported as created or saved. these are direct jobs. Now,
direct jobs. Okay, John.
What does that mean?
We're going to find out. Direct jobs. It's something very important. Please write this down.
I think I've spoken to this group.
Oh, and if you don't remember this, well, you're a dick. This is NLP. This is absolute mind control. I think I've spoken to this group. If you didn't hear that, well, you aren't part of the group, so you want to be part of the group, so you got to just take it as fact.
Before about this point, direct jobs are jobs that are directly created and funded through spending in the Recovery Act. In this case, for example, think about a job of an educator saved because
he says created.
Yep.
In the same sentence, he says saved.
Yeah, which is it?
state budget would have had to undergo cuts that would have enforced a layoff. That layoff has been avoided in these cases.
Okay, so first he says jobs, direct jobs are jobs created by jobs being saved because cuts didn't have to happen. That's what he's saying.
Through Recovery Act spending. Direct jobs are only part of the story. Indirect jobs...
Ooh, this is the best. John, can I hire you for an indirect job?
Anytime.
Yeah, I'll give you an indirect paycheck.
...occur when that teacher who otherwise would have been laid off goes shopping and is able to...
What?
Yeah, this is the beauty of it. So because we saved a job... The teacher, we saved more jobs because that teacher has to go shopping.
And so because she goes shopping, which she has to do anyway, she's saving jobs by doing so.
Yes.
And the administration is taking
counting
credit
it.
And adding
counting
it to the toll.
They're counting
the toll.
It. So they're saving Walmart jobs because they saved a teacher job.
Income earnings that she otherwise would.
And by the way, a teacher is always a she, just so you know. These guys are... dicks.
...wouldn't have had. That creates more economic activity. The point is that these 250,000 jobs, preliminary reporting on these jobs saved...
Notice the voice. 250,000 jobs...
...created are a subset even of this part of the Recovery Act. The law requires, the Recovery Act requires that...
This is great. Listen to the reporting requirements of this transparent government, the most transparent in history.
This more detailed reporting from recipients is made on about a third of the spending. It's about $276 billion of the $787 billion act. It's about $150 billion that's already been put to work through September 30th and subject to reporting this quarter. Now, the recipients are only asked to report the direct job impact, as I noted. Let me finish off by just talking about...
So what did he just say?
As far as I can tell, he's just babbling on with just... He's got a list of words, and he just reads them.
The headlines are 250,000 jobs saved or created. That's the headline. That's all he wants you to remember. And if you weren't a part of all these other briefings that he reminds you that I think I told you, then you're a douche.
How this maps on to the other work that, for example, our Council of Economic Advisors have done, generating the estimate that we've saved or created about 1 million jobs.
Oh, please! No! 1 million jobs! We're already a third of the way there, John.
So far. Includes both direct and indirect jobs.
There you go. So that 1 million jobs includes both direct and indirect jobs. I mean, you cannot cook the... I can see myself going to our board of directors and saying, look, we made $1 million, but just so you know, that's like 100,000 we actually made and 1 million that's coming. It's coming because it's indirect money.
And it includes not just a subset of the spending that has to be reported on through recipients, but the full set of Recovery Act activities that are out there in the field creating economic activity so far. So, just to be clear.
That's my favorite part. So, blah, 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 blah. 250,000 jobs, blah, 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 blah. So just to be clear, I got to pay attention
activities
now.
That are out there in the field creating economic activity so far. So just to be clear, preliminary recipient data that's coming in to the independent recovery accountability accountability.
The fuck is that thing called again? What was that thing that we shoved through Congress? Oh, yeah, that thing, yeah.
Transparency. Preliminary data coming into the board from recipients shows 250,000 education jobs saved or created. This is a subset of the 1 million jobs saved or created thus far through the Act, leaving us solidly on track to accomplish our stated goal of saving or creating 3.5 million jobs.
So the way they're doing it, we could have 50% unemployment and it would be a huge success.
Yeah.
Because we've saved or created the other, 50% of who are actually still employed.
Exactly.
What a crock.
But this is what is given to as a special bulletin, interrupting our regularly scheduled programming. This is what the press is fed, and the press just sits there and goes, and the hey. And then it's like, so just to be clear, oh, let me wake up for a second. 250,000 jobs, a million jobs. Oh my God, that's awesome. That is so awesome. It's awesome. We're doing great. Yay, Obama. Yay.
Jobs, yay. Jobs, jobs, and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
Canada Free Press reports Michelle Obama has more than 20 servants. I love how they report that. And she created some jobs. Have you ever known a first lady to have 20 people on staff?
I don't know. I don't know what the normal staffing is. But what do they all do? It seems like they take an awful lot of time bossing them around.
Yeah, it's, well, besides, you know, hairdresser and makeup, which, by the way, I think is totally valid. I mean, shit, you know, Tom Cruise and his wife have that. Of course, now it's slow to load because the CIA is filtering out all Canada Free Press through my AT&T connection. But there's a whole list, and you'll see it in the show notes at noagendashow.com. And she's got, and you know, people for $150,000 on the payroll there. All the way, I think the lowest is 46,000. But yeah, about 20, 22 people working with the first lady. She's got all kinds of staff supervisors and letter writers and amazing amounts of staff that that she apparently needs to in order to function.
Yeah, and this obviously is not as though she has a personal chef or anything, because the White House has that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's already like a
here
place
it is.
That's
I got it. I'm sorry.
Hugely staffed.
Chief of Staff, $172,000. Deputy Assistant to the President.
What does a First Lady need a Chief of Staff for? Well, never mind, because she has 20 people.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Then we have a Deputy Assistant to the President and First Lady and Director of Policy and Projects. We have Special Assistant to the President and First Secretary, Social Secretary. That's for all the parties. Special Assistant to the President and First Lady for Communications. Then we have Special Assistant, Deputy Chief of Staff. Then we have Deputy Chief of Staff. Okay, just a... Oh, that's so you have a special assistant deputy chief and then a deputy chief of staff. We have director and press secretary, director of scheduling and advance. It's like the away team. We have deputy director of policy and projects, deputy director and deputy social secretary, deputy director and deputy social secretary. So she has two of those. Deputy director of scheduling and events coordinator for the first lady, deputy director of advance and trip director. That's basically the woman who holds the umbrella in the air and says, follow me. Special assistant personal aide to the first lady. Associate Director and Deputy Press Secretary. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. Jobs. Creating jobs for the Obamas.
Yeah.
And they need it, honestly, because, you know, they got a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah, traveling they got a lot of things to do.
Is it time yet? Wait a minute. You know what? You know what? First, we got to tell people what our formula is, because I forgot to tell you. It's really simple.
Our formula is this. We go out. We hit people in the mouth.
That's all we do. And we love doing it for you. And I was up until 1:30 last night, John.
Yeah?
Doing some research. And I hate to say it, but it does fall under. Because we just can't get away from this shit. We just can't get away from it.
Well, you want me to play the propaganda piece that I recorded?
Yes, please.
Okay, now this I want to set it up. And at the end, this is the only time in the history of 60 Minutes have I ever heard a tag. In other words, that this is the end of the swine flu. The latest, you know, every week, people who listen to us all the time know that we're always looking for what is the angle they're going to use this week to get us to take this swine flu vaccine and, you know, stop, you know, stalling. And so now what it is well, the swine flu might only, you know, it's a long shot that anything's apparently the death rate on swine flu is less than 1%.
Yeah, it's not working.
Which is, which is less than it is generally for the regular flu, I think.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of questions that come up in this, but this is the, they had a big 60-minute special on it, and this is the just the very end of it where they're trying to scare you to death because, yeah, you might, yeah, sure, nothing's probably nothing going to happen to you, but if it does, you're really going to be screwed over. And but then you got to listen, then they end the report, and you got the tick, 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 and then you'll hear it when you hear it.
How hard H1N1 will hit the country. The director of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden, has placed his faith in a $3 billion vaccine program.
Vaccine is going to make the difference between whether we have lots and lots of cases or many fewer cases, and lots of deaths or fewer deaths.
The vaccine saves this country from the worst case scenario.
Absolutely.
And you have that much confidence in it?
Yes.
In its safety?
Yes.
And its ability to do the job?
Absolutely. We're confident it'll be effective. We have every reason to believe that it will be safe.
The vaccine has been out only since October the 5th. The CDC has not received any reports of side effects so far. What makes you so certain that this vaccine is safe?
The vaccine against H1N1 influenza is made just like the seasonal flu vaccines. About 100 million people get seasonal flu vaccine each year, and they have a very good safety track record.
For the people watching the interview who say, look, I've got a 99% chance of staying out of the hospital, why should I be vaccinated? What do you say?
You know, I hope that you'll be lucky and not suffer hospitalization or complications from flu, but the best way to reduce your chances of one of those terrible outcomes is to be vaccinated.
No one would have thought Luke Duvall in Little Rock would end up so critically ill. It's been a marathon. His condition improved, then worsened, and improved again. He's still in intensive care.
There's a full expectation that he is going home with us. The question is just when.
You weren't sure of that in the beginning.
That's a fact.
To find out how to get the H1N1 vaccine in your area, go to 60minutes.com.
Oh, my goodness.
Talk about laying it on thick. Here's a couple of points that were in there that I thought were interesting. One, that kid that was in the hospital apparently had MRSA.
Yeah, so he had another disease.
Yeah, and the other thing was that there's a woman who was a health public health official that was very sympathetic looking that says, "Oh, I hope you're lucky and you don't something bad didn't happen to you." Though she worded things so it's saying unlucky, but she says the flu's made exactly the same way as the seasonal flu vaccine, which is bull. We know that. Mm-hmm. And the question that he should ask, well, if it's made the same, why don't they just blend it in? Because the seasonal flu vaccine has three or four flu's shots in it. Why don't they just throw this one in and just forget about it? Why does it have to be separate?
Well, I have those answers.
I'm waiting.
Okay. Well, first of all...
So I don't go to CBS.com?
Please. Please feel free to go to CBS.com. Okay. So a couple things. Let me just open up my documents here because I did a shitload of work on this last night. So first of all, I wanted to relate to you from... what is kind of a private email thread, but it's not really. All of the Sequoia Capital companies, they have like an email expander, and you can send something to that, and it goes to all of the CEOs, etc., of Sequoia Capital companies. And
let's give the public that address, Adam.
No, let's not. But you can guess who is most active, because it's usually about the signal to noise is kind of relevant to me. Sometimes it's interesting. You know, it's like, hey, what the idea is pretty good. What PR firm are you using? How do I structure options for my company? Have you ever worked with? So there's a lot of valid stuff there. Now, who do you think is one of the most active people who emails this list on almost a daily basis? You know him very well.
I'm not going to guess.
He at one point was an entrepreneur in residence at Sequoia Capital.
Okay, tell me.
Jason Calacanis.
Oh, right.
So, subject.
So he's like pounding this list.
Yeah. Subject. Corporate policy on sick people during the age of swine flu. And he's listing his policies on the flu due to the swine flu concerns. Actually, he writes, this is funny, we have two new policies on the flu due to swine flu concerns. we are sending and paying for everyone for flu shots, which, first of all, is bogus because it's free. And by the way, as CBS stated, it's not $3 billion, it is $10 billion that Congress set aside. Each flu shot approximately costs the U.S. taxpayer $600, and I have the backup to prove that. That'll be in the show notes at noagendashow.com. This will serve as a feedback loop for everyone on the team, i.e. if people with flu shots still get sick, well, maybe we don't do this program next year. If the only people who get sick are the ones who don't get flu shots, well, that should motivate folks to get shots next year. Blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. So then he says, do you think this is insane or appropriate? So far, I have the support of my team. And then one of the guys from AdBright writes back and says, well, if the company employees feel good about this and don't feel it's 1984, but out of real concern for the health of staff, then I'd go for it. And here comes the kicker. So Calacanis writes back, and this is to the whole, there's a lot of people on this list, okay? So I don't consider this to be completely secret or private. It's just, it's crazy. This part, how this guy is so indoctrinated. Well, so far, only one person doesn't want to get a shot, and he is a young guy who says he's never taken a sick day in his life. I think everyone else appreciates it. I'm just scared to death with a pregnant wife and for my team members with kids. This shit is deadly! And I'm thinking, this shit is deadly. So, of course, and all of a sudden it hit me, John. A couple things hit me. One, we know that disclaimers of adverse effects of medication actually makes people want to buy it. That's why we've proven this time and time again. That's why all of the pharmaceutical ads are about 10 seconds worth of benefits and 50 seconds worth of side effects. So the fact that we're actually talking about Guillain-Barré disease, about neurological disorders, about mercury giving kids autism, about thimerosal, is actually making people want to go get the flu shot. So we're actually doing a bad thing by talking about all of this stuff. But the real thing is follow the money, okay? So two points I want to make. One, we've been noticing that now the pig meme is coming into all of this. And even though everyone says, oh no, you can't get swine flu from eating pork, of course, the pork industry, there's some very interesting developments that have taken place. Because if we have pigs that are infected with the swine flu, what do? We're going to cull them. We're going to kill the pigs. Enter Monsanto, who have a patent on a genetically engineered pig.
Oh, good one.
Okay. Now, I went to the websites of the four companies who have a license to produce the H1N1 vaccine, and you don't want to go to the website and just look at the, here's what we're doing, H1N1, we're so incredibly good. No, you want to go to investor relations, and y'all can follow along at home. I uploaded one of these corporate PowerPoint presentations to drop.io/ GSKXVO, and that'll be in the show notes at noagendashow.com, and you can download it from there. So this is the pipeline of GlaxoSmithKline, and it's amazing where everyone is saying, including some boneheads on some other show, that there will be no adjuvants in our vaccine. So first, vaccine business characteristics. So this is basically telling investors why it's so incredibly good to be in the vaccine business. Well, there's a few global players, and there's very high barriers to entry because of complex manufacturing, large-scale investment, long product life cycles, high probability of R&D success, new technology, novel products, better pricing, operating margin to comparable pharmaceutical products, heightened awareness, and there's new markets. And there's lots of pretty graphs and all kinds of beautiful stuff, and you scroll down and we're... Then we get to the slide, adjuvanted vaccines, immune response. And there's a little graph about how that works. And right here, why do we need better adjuvants? Because, John, you've already asserted that they've been trying to get this into our vaccines for a long time. Well, We need better adjuvants to induce strong immune responses, to induce long-term protection, as in with HPV vaccine Cervarix, to induce broader immune response, and to increase capacity by reducing antigen content and dose, as in the pandemic flu vaccine Pandemrix. So it's already in there. And then as we go down a little bit more, the United States emerging markets, there's a lovely graph here of all of their vaccines, of what's already on the market. And of course, we have the pre-pandemic. But then over there in phase three development is the new gen flu, John. Be on the lookout for that one. They're already developing vaccine for the new gen flu. And then, yeah, and then we go down. They're going to be big in Brazil. They're growing a diversified global business. And I'm trying to get to the slide where it talks about, here it is. So this was actually from September. So they're talking about all of their qualifications, about getting the World Health Organization approval. And then somewhere in here, there is an order from the United States government for this adjuvanted vaccine of 180 million doses. So we've already bought and paid for it. It's already on the way. It's completely full with adjuvants, and you must read through this PowerPoint. You will love it. You will love seeing how...
And you're putting this on the show notes, right?
Yeah, it's in the show notes. And then so I'm looking around a little bit more. I'm telling you, I stayed up way too late. And hold on, let me just find it. So there's this company called MedImmune, as MedImmune. Actually, MedImmune Inc.
MedImmune.
They are the makers of the nasal spray. And I'm looking around. It turns out that about a year and a half ago, they got a severe warning letter from the FDA about their nasal mist manufacturing. And when you read through this letter, which is highly redacted, literally stuff taken out, and that is actually the ingredients of their vaccine. So the ingredients of the vaccine are redacted in this note, which, by the way, was removed from the FDA's website. I had to go back to the archive Wayback Machine to get it. Here's some of the things that they were doing in their. This was for the regular flu mist. This is pre H1N1, but this is how they operate over there. Operators were observed wearing safety glasses, allowing for skin to be exposed and therefore increasing the opportunity for contamination. An operator was observed removing his or her safety glasses, then removing and cleaning his or her prescription-type glasses, thus allowing for skin to be exposed. Also, an operator was observed sampling his or her fingers onto an agar touch plate, and without sanitizing or changing his or her gloves, mixing the sterile filtered monovalent. In the facilities, you have failed to establish the effectiveness of cleaning and disinfection processes used in your manufacturing facility and by your personnel. For example, there were numerous environmental monitoring excursions for mold in downstream processing. The reports, laminar flow units, after cleaning.
I think you got the point across.
They've got contamination, they've got dirty labs, they've got dirty manufacturing, and normally you have a letter that closes out the issue, nowhere to be found. So we don't even know if they took care of all this shit, and it's the same plant where they're manufacturing the nasal mist for the H1N1 vaccine. Go ahead, shoot that shit up your nose.
Well, there's some other schemes going on, too, which we're going to have to probably get to in the weeks ahead. The Sebelius came out with some commentary about, which seems like a setup to me.
This is the point I wanted to make. Because now the meme is, we can't get the vaccine fast enough. So right, this is why the adjuvants are going to come into play. Well, we don't have enough of the vaccine. We can't produce it fast enough. So if we just can put the adjuvants in, please, then we'll have enough for everybody.
Yeah, with that, we came up with that. That meme is not new. I mean, that was, we thought it was at the beginning of the cycle. It just keeps cropping up again. I don't know. I'm not getting what they're hoping to accomplish here. But I know Sibelius has come out, and she said that she wants to have some sort of new way of making vaccines, and we should invest all our money in that, I assume that, you know, means that somebody's going to create some sort of a R&D scam. She doesn't want the egg thing anymore. She thinks that sucks.
Well, there was a huge investment done by Kleiner Perkins in companies that that supposedly are able to make vaccines without the egg process. I think it was like a $300 million investment. This was 4 or 5 years ago.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I have that Sibelius calls for updated vaccine making process. Health and Human Services Secretary says the U.S. is too dependent on foreign countries for production of vaccines, as shown by delays in the release of the H1N1 vaccine. Four or five manufacturers are foreign companies, a fact that alarmed lawmakers who expressed concern. Some expressed even greater concern that the lag in vaccine production could mean the H1N1 flu shots would arrive too late to do any good. This is set up, John. This is why GlaxoSmithKline, which is an American company, has 170 million doses of adjuvanted vaccine already bought, ordered, and ready to be delivered to the U.S. population.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, everything. But I think that these drug companies.
You hear that this week in virology?
No.
Douchebags?
Oh, those guys, yeah. No, they're just obviously stooges. By the way, you did mention Monsanto, so I do have a clip. This came from CSI Miami.
Of course.
And you should also mention Fast Forward over that
show.
Yeah,
I did want to talk about it. Just Fast Forward real quickly.
Yeah.
So Fast Forward, and the thing that I found interesting is if you look at this video, so this is all part of the media indoctrination. This chick is looking at a computer monitor, and there you see a big ad for the flu shots, and it's actually talking about the flu mist. But what I thought was interesting is she's actually doing a search on some phantom search engine. Why don't you just use Google if you want to make it look like it's real? It always has to be some fake site. And she's typing in pigmentation. And you know that if you look at if someone's typing the word pigmentation and the way it's cut, you really see the word pig before it gets to pigmentation.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, so pig. I'll put a link to that in the show
notes. Yeah, there's something going on with this pig thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you mentioned Monsanto and their architected pigs. God, hope they don't get too far with that one. So they had a Monsanto slam in the CSI Miami show, even though there wasn't – Monsanto's name could have been used, but it wasn't. And it has to do with, you know, patented seeds. But what's so funny is the way it was done. It was like the writer obviously had some concerns, and he threw this little – just out of the blue – bit right into a search these guys were doing for some E. coli contamination. And so they run into this black guy who sounds like a sharecropper, because we all know that if you're a farmer in Florida, you have to be black and kind of a sharecropper looking guy.
Yeah, of course.
And of course, we know that, you know, Florida is well known for growing corn. and it's in a cornfield.
That Monsanto shit can grow everywhere, dude.
And so this guy comes in and he gives him the song and dance about the whole thing. And then the cop is as though some, you know, suit at the network says, I think we've had enough of this. Tell the guy to screw himself. And so the cop, you just have to listen to this clip.
You don't work for Bixton?
That all the farms around here did.
Doesn't mean they aren't trying.
Buy you out?
By hell. They're getting us for free. They already grabbed my grandfather's first 40.
Well, how's that?
First 40. Is that a reference to 40 acres and a mule?
I guess.
I've said enough. You're a cop.
It's the disparagement laws?
You ever heard of drift?
No.
Listen to that dialogue. How poor is this acting? Oh, my gosh.
Well, I got caught in it. Bixton's patented seeds blew into my crops.
I didn't know you can patent a seed.
Neither did I. An inspector found a few of their seeds mixed up with mine.
And they accused you of stealing and sued.
Couldn't afford a lawyer, so I settled. Had to pay with land. That's how Seth lost Aunt Sally's to them.
I'm sorry to disturb you.
And he just walks off.
This episode of CSI brought to you by Monsanto.
He basically listens to his story, takes a call, and says, "Eh, sorry to have bothered you. Good luck with your lawsuit.
Good luck with your 40 acres." That, it's like racist. It's a whole bundle of joy. That one is.
I'm cracked up watching
what
it.
A great little show. So this is what we do. We spend our. I mean, I could have been having sex. I could have been smoking heroin. I could have been doing a whole bunch of things. No, instead, we didn't even get to the Baucus bill. We'll do it right after we do the plugs here, John. I want to talk about the Baucus bill just briefly. I read through the Baucus bill. It's 1,500 pages. You know, it's no Atlas Shrugged because it's, you know, it's single, double space,
number
and all
two.
That stuff. Yeah, have a drink. But it, you know, it's actual work is involved. John's sitting there. You know, he's actually. It's gotten so bad. It's so bad. The two of us. I'll show you. Last night, I got two text messages. The first one at I think 9:28. Who is the hot host on C-SPAN 2 interviewing the Battle Axe? And then 2 minutes later, she's MILFy too. You know, and
I thought that was, she didn't answer me back, so I figured if I put MILFy in there, you'd go running over to see it.
And then I'm like, sorry,
I know your style.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, and so I wasn't working. I was doing something else at that very minute. And John's like, "What on a pre-show night? I'm friggin' working while you're fucking around." You know. And so we actually keep each other in check. We're really working hard, and we don't have any advertising on the show because we couldn't do any of what we're talking about here. Because the only ads you can get these days are from the big, you know, the big companies. There's only a couple. It's going to be anything that's been bailed out by the government. So it's
and it also interrupts the flow of the show, which is one of the main reasons we don't want to do advertising. I mean, we could probably rationalize.
In order to make enough money, we would have to interrupt the show at least 8 times during our hour and a half.
Exactly. At least. Yeah. So we only interrupt once, and it's right now. So I want to thank some people who gave us some income this week, our new producers. Starting with Jerzy Advent, who is Advent in Zlotystok, Poland. He gave us $50.
Ah, thank you.
Dave Koss, Euless, Texas, $100. And I think he's on the plan for, he may be one of the night plans.
Cool.
James Briscoe, we've heard before, Bay Shore, New York. In fact, actually, I need to go to the site because there's a bunch of notes on some of these. And he gave us $93.57. And this is based on some weird calculation about what each show that he's listened to is worth. And then he put some symbolism in there. And it, believe me, it's the longest explanation. I couldn't possibly read it. It would go on for an hour. Donald Martin, Atlantic Beach. I didn't know there was such a place. Atlantic Beach, Florida, gave us $100. Our 16th female listener, Serena Swanson, in Bristol, UK, gave us $108.07, and that has to do with the date, 1-8-0-7, that the first monkey ad ran for PG Tips.
Ah, right. Yeah, I got a lot of email about that.
Yeah, I did too. Matt Sharp. Pentier, North Dakota, became a state in 1889. He's our Fargo executive producer, $188.90. Ricky Pierce in Australia, $50, and he's in the NSW, New Southwest Territory, whatever the heck it is. Somebody's got to explain to me the map. Shane Bradley, Plattsburgh, Missouri, $50. Joseph Kelly, Baytown, Texas, and he gave us $111.11. John Kelly in Charlotte, North Carolina, who I think is on the knighthood plan. He's given us another $50.
Thank
you. Cone Peters, Eindhoven.
That'll be Kuhn, K-O-E-N, Kuhn.
Kuhn Peters. Kuhn.
Kuhn. Chaka Kuhn. Chaka Kuhn. Chaka Kuhn.
In Eindhoven, $56.76, which had some meaning. Cheryl Starr.
Whatever.
Whoops. Number set. That's number 18.
No, yeah, 18, I think, yeah.
18 or summer 18, make a note. She's in Sacramento.
All right. Hey, we could do a meetup.
The insane number of 5150.
Dude, call Scoble. We can do a meetup.
Jerry Brace, who's given us before, he wants us to plug embraceware.com. And he gave us, this time he gave us $80.80, which of course refers to 8080, the 8080, Intel 8080. 8080 chip, which was the foundation for all personal computers and desktop machines to this day. And by the way, a lot of smart money uses the number 8080 in their phone number, and I would, and Bill Gates even has an 8080 number, and I do too.
Why is that smart money?
Because it just it's a code.
Ooh.
It's code for like you know the number 8080, and which means you've been around for a while. Anyway, we want to thank all those people, especially the people who gave us the smaller amounts, including the few $49.99 amounts.
And those are the people who just don't want to be mentioned at all. That's why they hit us under the 50. We should maybe raise that level and only talk about people at 100 or over.
Well, I think we can keep this going for a while.
We can't do that yet, can we? There's not enough coming in. Is it growing at all?
Yeah, it's just pretty steady. I mean, it's growing a little bit. I'd have to look. I have to do a chart, and I can figure it out. But I would advise people to go to noagendashow.com and dvorak.org/NA and help us out, because we do need this income to pay the bills, and we need it on a weekly basis, and we just keep asking for it. But we don't interrupt the show, and we don't have ads, and we don't have codes, and we don't do all these crazy things that we could do. I mean, we'll do them on the website. I mean, you know, it's not a problem there, but I'm talking about this.
We have one link to Squarespace because we're using a Squarespace site.
Yeah, that they gave us.
Yeah, big deal.
So, I mean, we could fill a thing with ads.
No, I don't want to. I just want people to give us enough money. I just want to quit my day job. That's all I need. And we would basically need, what, 8 times the amount we're getting? 10 times the amount we're getting now? If we get 10 times, look, we can do it. Together we can pull it off.
/NA, go there immediately. Now give us, we're running out of time here.
Yeah, over because I have a list of stuff we haven't talked about that would be perfect for a third show, which we just cannot do because I can't quit the day job. And quite honestly, you can't do it either too. You've got to do stuff that makes money. You got to keep the home. You got 2 homes.
So why don't you tell us, you want to do the Baucus Bill thing on Sunday?
I'll do it real quickly now. So in this bill, section 2215, and I read, by the way, it's nice they released it on PDF. And of course, this was negotiated behind closed doors, not televised on C-SPAN as our president promised us. So you got to go and see there's all these special exceptions for Nevada. Isn't Baucus from Nevada, by the way? Someone's from Nevada. One of those guys is from Nevada. So there's all kinds of special exceptions. It's supposed to be the same for everybody. Universal health care. Section 2215, temporary high-risk pools for individuals. In general, not later than 1 year after the date of enactment of this title, the secretary, that would be Sebelius, an anti-gun freak, shall establish one or more high-risk pools that provide to all eligible individuals health insurance coverage that does not impose any pre-existing condition exclusion with respect to such coverage for eligible individuals, blah, 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 blah. So if you read through all this language, which actually isn't too hard, I have to say the bill is pretty easy to read. They're going to be high-risk pools. And these high-risk pools will include people who own guns, people who fly planes, people who have cars that have a certain amount of kinetic energy and can drive really fast, and you will have to pay more for your health care. It's in there. It's what I predicted, and it's going to happen. But it won't happen immediately. It happens 1 year after the bill is out, and then we're going to go after the guns.
Yeah, they're going after the guns. I mean, they've been trying to go after the guns in every way they can, and they figure slip this one in. Who's going to know? Now, but they're not really going after your guns. Hey, you can pay the extra money and keep your guns.
Yeah, let me just give you a bit of advice. Here's Adam Curry's financial advice, and I've been pretty right in the past. You could have bought put options on the Dow when I predicted it would go to 8276. You could have bought gold when it was well under $900, and I told you it was going up. It's now near 1070. Here's my financial advice. When this bill passes eventually, the whole premise is you will be able to get insurance without pre-existing condition. Correct, John?
Yes.
That's a big part of it. So,
just what they said.
Right. Yeah. So I suggest that you do not have any health care whatsoever. You pay the approximate $1,700 a year tax. It actually says in this bill the IRS tax. It doesn't say penalty. It says IRS tax, so it's an actual tax that's in there. You pay that, and if you get sick, God forbid you get cancer or something big, then you just go to an insurer, and you say, hey, give me some health insurance. You can't deny me just because I got cancer.
and then you're good to go. I don't see how anyone doesn't see this obvious loophole that's big enough to turn a 747 around in.
Hmm.
Doesn't that make sense? No, you cannot be refused. Okay. Hey, you know what? I got cancer. It really sucks, but I need some health insurance so I can pay for it. So give me that pre-existing condition. Hey, you can't refuse me for that. Give me the health care.
Well, I think some of our industrious listeners and producers should look into this. You might be right. And that would be the loophole. Just say, screw it. I'll pay the tax. You know, which is, you know, a tax. It says tax, we're not supposed to say, no, we got no new taxes. And it's not a tax.
Obama said
it wasn't a tax two or three times, but it's a tax.
Let me just.
Yeah, you just pay the tax, which would be like paying $1,700 for old fashioned health insurance, which means, you know, you don't get, you know, $10 prescriptions or anything, but you got the insurance against a bad situation, and you pick it up on the fly when you need it. So it's almost like, you know, it reminds me of C-band. People, you know, realize it used to be the way satellite, people, you have these big dishes in the backyard. You know, there's still some benefits to that now that they have it in stereo and they have it in high def. You can get these big dishes. I'm thinking of getting one, because one of the things you can do is that there are various services around the country where you can just get HBO for a day.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to have a year round. You spend hundreds of dollars a month to get your satellite dish. You get the free dish, which is C-band, the big old dish. You get a receiver. It doesn't cost a nickel. And then when you want to see some movies on HBO, you go on the computer. You go on one of these systems. You say, yes, I want HBO now. Click. You got HBO on. You pay for 2 days of HBO, but you hit the button. It's off.
And you're done. You're good to go.
You've saved a fortune.
Here it is. Section 1301. Excise tax on individuals without essential health benefits coverage. It's right there. It's right there. It's a tax. Excise tax. What does excise mean?
That's, you know, I've seen that word used a lot, and I always thought it means just extra or an added tax or something like that, but let's look up the word.
Excise tax. Here it is. Excise, sometimes called excise duty or special tax, is a type of tax. Excise duty is a tax levied on the producer of certain goods. It's a tax, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a targeted tax.
It's a tax.
That's what it is. It's a targeted tax.
So again, you didn't have to read this bill, and I will continue to peruse it. There's also stuff about smoking, which, by the way, you know, in universal health care, I mean, yeah, if you're a smoker, you should have to probably be penalized. But also, if you are, if you eat crap, and if you stay up late, and if you drink, and it's just not exactly an easy thing to put together. But we need it. It's like our necessary war in Afghanistan. We're going to pass this year.
All right. Sorry about the long show, folks.
I can't help it. And, you know, it's not like I wasn't entertaining myself.
And don't forget, we had some good stuff in this show. We talked about, what?
I don't know. I forgot.
John Breck.
We got him. John Breck. Coming to you from the minimum.
They talk about the opium fields and the fact that we need a big surge in Afghanistan during the winter.
Just remember, it's all fighting. John Breck.
It's called John Breck. Go to noagendashow.com and help us out. We can use it. And we appreciate everybody who, and really greatly appreciate everybody who's contributing to this show. And I got a lot of notes, people saying, I finally had to do it, you know.
Yeah, it is highly appreciated. Coming to you from the Crackpot Command Center, located in the Minimum Security Containment Cell in Gitmo Nation West, San Francisco, California, I'm Adam Curry.
And at to be found at Dvorak.org/NA and noagendashow.com, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll be back on Sunday, same time, same stream, with No Agenda.